Thank you very much, Matt. While I have some handouts being handed out to everybody, I'll just give you a few background bits of information about myself for your help. I've been in the ministry now for 48 years, going on almost 49 now. I grew up in the church, kind of like Matt Earls. My parents were in the church many years ago up in the Willamette Valley up in Oregon. And we went to Ambassador College. That's where I met my wife, in Ambassador College in Pasadena. We got married in 1962, and then we were sent to Australia for working in the ministry down in Australia from 1962 until 1974. While we were there, we had the opportunity to not only work in Australia and among the members there, but in New Zealand and up in Malaysia and Singapore, Indonesia, and all of the southern part of the Asian continent. So we have international experience as well as being on a national basis since coming back in 1974. We've been to I don't know how many different church areas, but we've worked in a lot of churches, both in the West Coast and now on the East Coast. To a large degree, our lives have been on the West Coast, very little on the center part. I guess as far east as we've been is Montana and Arizona, until we've came to Pennsylvania going on 3 years ago. So it's been a long and happy ride being in the Church of God. So, okay, I think you all will have in your hands a handout. If you see any mistakes in the printing, it's the computer. No. I'm not being computer savvy the way some people are. I actually typed out the verses rather than just paste them in and have the computer move them. So there may be a couple of typos. I hope not. But anyway, it'll give you a little bit of a thing to follow along, the scriptures that we will be dealing with. And covering the subject of the Sabbath, is it relevant today and as God's holy days? As Mr. Earls covered the law in general about its applicability and its relevancy today, we're going to zero in on the fourth commandment of the Sabbath, which contains also the law regarding God's plan of salvation revealed through the holy days, the annual Sabbaths of God. We're going to be dealing with 8 specific reasons why, as a church, we believe in keeping the Sabbath and the holy days. Why are they important? Why does God expect us to keep them? And why don't we, as so many of the churches do today, think that they are done away with and that the Sabbath is no longer relevant? That we can choose which day we want to keep, and we can choose which day we want to worship God on. And I guess the question that comes is, does it really make any difference? In the words of one of our famous politicians recently, I guess, is, what difference does it make? All right. And the question is, what difference does it make whether or not we keep God's laws regarding the Sabbath and the holy days? And so we need to move along pretty quickly and show that it does make a difference to God, and it makes a difference to us. So we will be then going through 8 specific reasons why we keep, we observe, we remember, and we honor and keep holy the days that God has pictured. I want to begin by actually going way back to the very beginning. What was God's intent right from the very beginning regarding his holy times and his holy days and the times that he knew were going to be picturing his plan of salvation. Now I want to go back to the book of Genesis chapter 1. This is where the Sabbath and the holy days actually began. Before they were ever given by Moses, before they were ever given from Mount Sinai. But in Genesis 1 and verse 14 and 15, we read in the book of Genesis, and it says, "And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the days from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years." So here, even before, as he was recreating the earth and preparing it for humanity, which he was going to create just a few days later or at a different time, but in this fourth day of the creation, God had said he established certain lights in the heavens that they might divide the day and the night, and they were given for signs, for seasons, for days, and for years. It's interesting that the word seasons is the Hebrew word moed, which means appointed sacred times, appointed by God. So in looking at this and then going on through the rest of the Bible, we find that actually God's intent right from the time of the creation was that there would be appointed times, appointed seasons that would be for the revealing of his will and for the revealing of his true plan of salvation. Actually, they were built into the universe itself. They are built into the whole system of God's times, moed, which means appointed or set time. So it's interesting that prior to his establishing of the Sabbath over a couple of chapters, the next chapter, chapter 2, that God had already shown his intent that man would learn from certain set preserved times. So the point number one in the reason why we keep the holy days and the Sabbath is because they are appointed not only by God, they are actually appointed by the calendar, by the sun, and by the cycle that has been established, the Sabbath and the holy day. Number two, why do we keep the Sabbath and the holy days? Is in Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, in giving of the annual days that God specified in the book of Leviticus chapter 23, I'll pick up the first four verses. He says, "And the Lord said to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say unto them concerning the feasts of the Lord." You'll notice on my typing that I cap all caps certain key phrases, that these were the feasts of the Lord, not man or not something that man created or came up with, unlike our holidays in our system, because they were created by man and they came about through man's institution. The days that God set aside were created by God. They are the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. Even these are my feasts. And then he says, verse 3, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest. So the seventh day of each week is established as that day. Now some will ask, well, yeah, but how do we know that the Sabbath today or the seventh day is the original seventh day? How do we know that it's not Sunday today? Well, if you want to do some historical research, you will find that a lot of things have been changed But the cycle of the week has never been altered or changed. There have always been 7 days in the week, and they always go around in a circuit. Man may change a lot of things, and he may even eventually try to change that cycle. But so far, God has not allowed man to do so. We know which day is the Sabbath. The Jews know which day is the Sabbath. It's never altered. It's never changed because it's God's day. So they are proclaimed. It's interesting that the word, again, is moed. They are appointed holy times, appointed by God, set by God. And they are for our good. Over in Exodus chapter 31, we'll find another good reason why we keep the Sabbath and the holy days in Exodus. Chapter 31 and verse 12. And he says, "And the Lord said to Moses, saying, Speak you unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily, my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you." In other words, it's a signpost. It is something that is like a neon sign that should say something. You know, people don't buy neon signs unless they are pointing something out, right? Well, the Sabbaths are to point out something between God and man. They are a sign between me and you throughout your generations that you may know that I am the Lord. That's one of the things it points out. Now, frankly, keeping Sunday does not point out God. God didn't make it a special time. He made the Sabbath a special time. And the reason the Sabbath is important is that it points out and that we may know that I am the Lord that does sanctify you. It sets people apart. It makes them a set apart people. Having grown up as a Sabbath keeper, I'll guarantee you it sets you apart. I remember going to high school back in those days when we were Sabbath keepers. Everything is geared toward keeping Sunday, right? All the sports programs and everything else. It's always the most important day is on Friday night and Saturday. So I was never allowed to take part in a lot of those differing activities because they are always on the Sabbath. It sets you apart very quickly. So one of the reasons people like to keep or don't like to keep them today is because it is difficult. Our children have our grandchildren now, and they find it very difficult to keep the Sabbath because they all want to take part in the sports programs. And they happen to be pretty good. My one grandson is 6'9" tall. and he is very good at basketball. And he wanted to become a basketball star, which I'm not sure he ever will. I said, well, you better plan a second vocation. Because, let's face it, very few people ever become basketball stars, even if they are very good at playing. It's not easy to be getting there. Anyway, he's very good, but they like to participate in high school, and now that they're in college, they still do. So, unfortunately, they are not keeping the Sabbath the way they should be either, because they have become wrapped up in that way of life. But God says that they do set us apart. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it's holy to you. Everyone that defiles it shall surely be put to death. Coming on down to verse 15, 6 days you may work be done, but in the seventh, that is the day, the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever does any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. And verse 16, wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. As Matt Earls was pointing out this timeline, so far as I know, perpetually means continually, doesn't it? No, I don't think you're going to stop somewhere in between. It is a perpetual covenant. And so it is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. And so we find that God gave the Sabbath. Another reason why it's very important is in Ezekiel chapter 20, in the book of Ezekiel, that it not keeping the Sabbath and the holy days led to the captivity of ancient Israel. It will also lead to the captivity of modern day Israel, not keeping the holy times that God has set aside, because God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So what led to their captivity many years ago is going to cause our peoples and us today the same problems. Verse 11 to 13 in Ezekiel chapter 20. He says, and I gave them my statutes, and I showed them my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. Interesting parenthetical expression there that says that life really comes by keeping the law, right? That brings about life. We shall live in them. Moreover, also I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and you, that they might know that I am the Lord that sanctify them. But he says, the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness, and they did not walk in my statutes, and they despised my judgments. It's interesting terminology. Why did God choose to use certain words? But he says that they did not walk in my statutes. So his law, his statutes, was something that you actively have to walk in, right? And they despised my judgments. There was an animosity and a hatred and a resentment against the judgments of God. And then he says, and my Sabbaths they greatly polluted. Now, I can't give you all the reasons why he uses the three different terms, but it's interesting research. God says the Sabbaths are broken by polluting them. That it, pollution is that you mix them with something else, that you muddle them up, muddy the waters, pollute them. He says in the rest of that verse, he says, then I said I would pour out my fury upon them in the wilderness to consume them. So God chose certain days, and he said that it was not for human beings to pollute them. You can come on down to other verses, verse 18, verse 24, and others that talk about the same thing, that God's Sabbath. Third reason why we keep the Sabbath and the holy days is because they are commanded in the new covenant, under the new covenant, New Testament of God. The Sabbaths and the holy days are not just an Old Testament concept. And so we will find in the evidence of the scriptures that they were New Testament, and they were kept by the individuals who were striving to be obedient to God. I want to just use one verse that may be a little bit abstract in certain ways, but it's interesting. In Matthew 17, at this transfiguration of Christ during when they went up to the mountain, and he was transfigured before the three disciples, that we find evidence that they were aware of and knew about and kept the Sabbath and the holy days. I'll pick it up in verse 1 of chapter 17. and the first four verses, where he says, "And after 6 days, Jesus took Peter and James and John, his brother, and brought them up into the high mountain that was apart, and he was transfigured before them, and his face did shine as the sun." In other words, Christ at this time allowed himself to appear in his glorified state before Peter, James, and John. "And his raiment did shine as white as the light." And this, suddenly this individual, this friend of theirs that they were with, became something totally different. And verse 3 it says, "And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him," that is, talking with the one who was Christ. So you had the three of them. "And then answered Peter, and he said unto Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you will, let us make here three tabernacles, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Now, why on earth would it suddenly come to Peter's mind, we ought to build three tabernacles or booths? It was obvious that he thought they were in the time of the kingdom pictured by the Feast of Tabernacles, and that they should go build these three booths at the present time so that Christ could have one, Moses would have one, and Elijah would have one. Peter was aware of and knew about this and about keeping of the holy days, so it was just a natural thing for him. If they weren't keeping them, why would he think about that? Why would he even be aware that this should be pictured by building a booth? So we find evidence then of the New Testament, even in an abstract verse in Matthew 5:17 about the transfiguration, that the Feast of Tabernacles was picturing the kingdom of God. So we find a lot of New Testament evidence. I guess we'll leave it that there, that was evidence. Number four, however, is that Jesus kept the Sabbath and holy days. So why do I keep the Sabbath? Why do we as a church keep the Sabbath? The fourth reason is that Christ kept them. Go back over to Luke chapter 2. In the Luke, the second chapter. And picking up in verse 41 and 42. In Luke chapter 2. "And now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover." It wasn't just a one-time situation. Every year they went up. And it was no small jaunt to go from Nazareth up to Jerusalem. In those days, it wasn't like just crossing the street. It was a fair journey. There are many recording of people going in caravans and going up to the Feast of Tabernacles, and it was somewhat of a 3 or so day journey in order to go up to Jerusalem to keep the feast. And so we find here in Luke that Christ's parents made it a habitual act. It was a custom of theirs every year at the Passover to go up to Jerusalem. Now, when he was 12 years old, they were going up and had gone up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. So Christ's parents kept the law of God and the holy days. It was their custom to go up to Jerusalem to keep the time. Christ went with them. This particular time later, when he was 12 years old, they had gone up, and he got separated from the rest of the group. And we might think, boy, they were pretty bad parents. They didn't know where their child was. Well, that's not all that easy, not difficult for them to do, if you realize that they were in a lot of family, relatives were involved in going up there, that Christ would have had many aunts and uncles and cousins and other place people along. And they were on this, basically a 3-day caravan trip up to Jerusalem. or back home, it would have been very easy for. I remember one time in Australia when my brother and his wife had come down and to keep the Sabbaths with us, and so our daughter was going to be going home with them, we thought. And we got home and found out that she wasn't with them. That she'd gotten separated from our own family. It can happen. We may be bad parents, but it can happen very easily when you have relatives that are involved in taking care of these things. So Christ did keep, and it was their custom to keep the feast. Over in John chapter 7. It's interesting about the book of John, just for your information, that the whole book of John, the Gospel of John, its time sequence is set around the holy days. If you understand the book of John, it is going from one holiday or holy time to a different one. That you can basically pinpoint the time setting of the book of John by the holy times or holy set appointed moed or appointed times of God. Whether they be the Passovers or the days of unleavened bread or by the Feast of Tabernacles or others that they are mentioned in the book of John. And outside of keeping of the holy days, basically you cannot understand the book of John and its real setting of what was happening. I turn to John chapter 7. In John, the 7th chapter of the book of John, and here we find one of these occasions where Christ was keeping of the feast time. And beginning with verse 2, it says, "Now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacle was at hand. And his brethren therefore said to him, 'Depart and go up to Judea, that your disciples also may see the works that you do.'" In other words, what his relatives were saying, "Hey, if you want to become well known, why don't you go up to Jerusalem? That's where you're going to become well known." And Jesus said to them, "Don't try to get rid of me faster than what I want." He knew that the Jews were out to get him, and therefore he wasn't going to go up openly at this time. In verse 4 it says, "For there is no man that does anything in secret, and he himself seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world." And what it was Christ's response? He says in verse 5, "For neither did his brethren believe in him." And then Jesus said to them, "My time is not yet come, but your time is always ready." And then in verse 8 he says, "But you go up unto this feast." So even if Jesus was not going up himself, Christ was not going to go up at this period of time, he told his disciples, "You go up to Jerusalem and keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And I will go up yet to the feast, for my time is not yet full come." And verse 10, then he says, "But when his brethren were gone up, then went he also up unto the feast, but not openly, but as it were in secret." So Christ did still go up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, but he did it more secretly at first. Although later on in the feast, he let himself be known very clearly. Coming on down to verse 14, he says, "But about the midst of the feast," because it's an 8-day long festival, the 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles, and then the last great day, or the last 8th day, during the middle of that, he says, when he had gone up there, verse 14, "And now about the midst of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and he taught." And so he was keeping the whole period of time. Then coming on down to verse 37, at the end of the book or toward the end of the book of John chapter 7 and verse 37. He says, in the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. So we find here that Jesus was keeping this whole Feast of Tabernacles. And then on the last day, he begins to show them what all of this time really pictures. What does it really mean? And he began to reveal the spiritual part of the holy days, the plan of God. And the real important part in keeping of all these things is our relationship with God. And it says then in verse 37, if any man thirst, then let him come to me and drink. That it is drinking in of the knowledge, the understanding, and the Spirit of God that brings us to total and complete conversion. Christ wants us all to drink, but he uses specific times, and Christ kept those days. Now, there are many other occasions throughout the four Gospels where you could find Christ was keeping the holy days. But just suffice it to say, the fourth reason why we keep the holy days is because Jesus kept the Sabbath and the holy days. The fifth reason why we keep the holy days is because the disciples kept the holy days. I just want to turn to one verse over in Acts chapter 2. In Acts, the second chapter, where we find in verse 1 of Acts chapter 2, and when the day of Pentecost, which was one of those appointed times of God, Moed, set seasons of the year, and this day of Pentecost had fully come, and the reason he uses the term fully come is because Pentecost is the one day that you have to count. 50th day from a specific point that you come to the Feast of Pentecost. So that period had fully lapsed and had come now to the Feast of Pentecost. They were all with one accord in one place. Sounds to me like they were still keeping the feast. They were all in one place and all in unity. And then verse 2 says, and suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind, and it filled the house where they were sitting. What if the disciples had not been there keeping the Feast of Pentecost? I don't know. What would have happened? But God knew that his disciples, his people, would be there at that time, all in one accord, when God poured out his Spirit upon them. So the disciples were keeping the special times of God. It was their custom. Number 6, we come then to the Apostle Paul. Oh, here's the favorite. A lot of people will say, yeah, well, we know that Christ did that, and we know that the disciples, but man, we come to Paul, he's our guy. You know, he suddenly changes everything. Well, first of all, frankly, Paul has no authority to change anything from what God established. And he didn't change anything from what God had said. But a lot of people use Paul as their champion when we find that the Apostle Paul kept all of the holy days and the feast times. I want to turn back over to Acts chapter 18. Acts the 18th chapter. Before I comment about this, Acts chapter 15 was where they had the general conference of elders in Jerusalem dealing with the subjects of what should be taught, what should be preached to the Gentiles. And that all of the people had come together, the different apostles, and the Apostle Paul was there, Barnabas was there, and others. And Peter and James and Paul and the others had discussed this whole subject of what should be taught to the Gentiles. And they discussed what should be required of them and what should not be required of them. And all of this had taken place in the 15th chapter of the book of Acts. Now, according to my regulations, maybe I'm wrong, but Acts chapter 18 comes after chapter 15. Okay? So all by this time in chapter 18, all that had been, in quote, changed, had been changed. All that had, in quote, been nailed to the cross, had been nailed to the cross. All that had, in quote, been done away with, had been done away with. And all those things that we no longer needed to be doing had been altered. So by that time then, all of that had happened in chapter 15. And then we come to chapter 18. After chapter 15, in time setting and in time order, and we pick up in verse 4 of chapter 18. And it says, "And Paul, he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath, and he persuaded the Jews and the Greeks that his operandi, his way of operation, his way of doing things was that he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day that was being kept, and he reasoned with the Jews and with the Greeks or the Gentiles." Why would he be doing that after chapter 15 when everything had been changed that was supposed to be changed? He was still keeping the holy day and teaching people to keep the Sabbath, and he was commenting and dealing with them. Over in Acts chapter 20 and verse 16, says, "For Paul had determined to sail by Ephesus, because he would not spend the time in Asia. For he hasted, if it were possible for him, to be at Jerusalem this day of Pentecost." Now, Paul had established the church and the people in Ephesus. He had spent months there in establishing the church and spending time with the people. And you will find it was a gut-wrenching time of when Paul was there with the Ephesians, and he was telling them that they may not see him again because he knew some difficult times were coming up, and the people were hanging on to him, and they did not want him to leave after what he had said about going up to Jerusalem. So he was very close to the people in Ephesus. And yet here we find that he was not going to go to this area of Ephesus in spending some time with people that he knew very well, he loved a lot. And the reason he wasn't going there is because he did not want to spend time in Asia. They knew that if he went there, the people would want him to spend time with him. They would want him to be there for a period of time. And the reason he didn't want to do that was because he had his set time schedule. He wanted to be at Jerusalem to keep the Feast of Pentecost. In other words, this day was so important to him that he was willing to bypass one of his favorite peoples and his favorite church areas in order to keep a special time called the Feast of Pentecost. Over in chapter 27 and verse 9 of the book of Acts, we find that Paul, now when the time was spent and when sailing was now dangerous, we find that they used even appointed set times as times of reckoning, even weather-wise. And so they knew that after this period of time called the fast, which if you go back to Leviticus 23, you will find it is the Day of Atonement, and sailing or sea travel after the Day of Atonement, which was getting pretty late in the fall of the year, was a dangerous occupation. You read the rest of the book of Acts and you'll find how bad and how dangerous it was, right? Because their ship broke up and they spent some time in the water, and it was a dangerous trip. And so we find here in Acts 27 that Paul was on board, and the fast was now already past. The Day of Atonement, a time when they were worshiping God, but it became a set time that you would establish travel and everything else by, was on this period of time, the holy times of God. Now, for us who have been in the church for many years, that really is true. My whole year's schedule is centered around all of the holy days. My calendar is established by the times called the Sabbath and the holy days. The Sabbath on a weekly basis, and all of the holy days on a yearly basis. My calendar marks that off as special times. And so even like in the days of the Apostle Paul and others, it became their schedule, their calendar. My calendar is punctuated with the seven annual Sabbath of God. It's just the way it is. Now, most of the people in today's society, they punctuate their calendar with what? Easter, or with Halloween. I won't get them in order because I don't even remember them anymore. No. Christmas. Or you'll have all of these other holidays that become very important in people's lives. If we get our lives in tune with God, our lives become punctuated with the Sabbath of God, not the other times. And they are important. One of the most concrete evidences of the holy days is over in 1 Corinthians 5. In the 1 Corinthians, and another one of the churches that Paul had established in Corinth. And we find in 1 Corinthians 5, beginning of verse 6, where Paul is teaching the people in Corinth a lesson, because many of them, he said, had been puffed up and their glorying was not good. And he was dealing with certain subjects and certain conditions that were prevalent. But he says, "Your glorying is not good. Know you not that a little leaven leavens the whole lump?" Now, that's a strange concept to use. Why would he use that? That a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Except that he was illustrating life by the holy times of God. And he says, "Don't you know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump?" So he says, verse 7, "Purge out, therefore, the old leaven, that you may be a new lump." Spiritually, in their lives, Paul says, get rid of that pride and that arrogance and that hostility toward God, and throw it out like you would old leaven, and become a new lump. So he says, "Purge out, therefore, the old leaven, that you may be a new lump." And then he puts a strange word in concept, a strange parenthetical expression in here, "as you are unleavened." So here you have a Gentile church in Corinth that Paul had established that is keeping the days of unleavened bread and the Passover. And they were unleavened because they had followed the requirements that are stipulated in the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, that you throw out the old leaven, you get rid of it. You don't have leavened bread during this period of time. You become unleavened, as these people have become unleavened. But Paul was saying, physically doesn't do it. You can throw out the yeast and the baking soda, and you can throw out the old leaven, but what God really wants is for us to become a spiritual group of people, whether an individual or a group. He wants us to become spiritually unleavened as we are unleavened. As we throw out the old leavening physically, we need to become unleavened in character, in the way God wants us to be. And so he says in verse, coming on down in verse 8, therefore, let us keep the feast. Hasn't been done away with yet in Acts chapter 15, so they are still keeping the feast. Let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. We keep the Sabbath and the holy days today, but we do keep them with a new understanding as far as the spiritual meaning that's involved in them. The spiritual intent for what we do today. Now, we may do the physical things, but what God really wants is the spiritual meaning, the spiritual change in our lives. And that is what Paul was talking to them about. Go to one other one over in 1 Corinthians 11. 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 23 to 28. And here again, Paul is dealing with the subject of the Passover. And he says, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and he said, well, back up to verse 23, for I have received of the Lord that which also I delivered unto you. In other words, Paul says, I don't teach my own ideas or my own thinking. Everything I give has come from God. It is what Christ revealed and showed me. And that I have delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, the same night in which he was betrayed, he took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it, and he said, take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me. And after the same manner also he took the cup when he had supped, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood. This do you as oft as you drink it in remembrance of me. In verse 26, for as often as you eat this bread and you drink this cup, you do show the Lord's death till he come. That the Passover and the emblems of the Passover, the bread and the wine, that Christ established and that we still keep our in remembrances of what he is and what he has done. And we keep the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. And Paul was teaching them in Corinth that they should be keeping those days too. In verse 28 he says, but let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of the cup. In other words, we ought to be doing what God says. As I said, Paul himself kept the laws. He kept the rules. I want to turn back to the book of Acts again in chapter 24. And there are several other scriptures which I won't take time to read right now. But in Acts 20, chapter 24 and verse 14, this is in Paul's defense of himself as he had been taken and was now being examined and criticized and actually imprisoned for what he taught and what he believed. And so in his defense, Paul tells them that he is a good Jew who still keeps all of the law. in verse 14, as in his defense, and he says, "But this I confess to you, that after the way, which they call heresy," in other words, after that example of Jesus Christ and following him, "but after the way, which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets." Now, if he was trying to save his life, he wouldn't have been saying that, right? But what he was saying was, "I still believe in obeying the law of God and all that is written in the prophets and in the law." He believed and was a good practicing person in the ways of God, in the way. Okay, number 7, very briefly, what is about the future then? Why do we keep the Sabbath and holy days? Because they will be kept for all eternity. In Zechariah 14, back in the Old Testament, right toward the end of the chapter of the Old Testament, he says in Zechariah 14 and verse 16, "And it shall come to pass that every one that is left of all of the nations which come against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year." Sounds like what Jesus' parents did. They went up to Jerusalem from year to year, right? So now we are way down the line when Christ now has come back and he is establishing his kingdom, that they will go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So we find they were kept and specified even before the time of Moses. Now we find that in the far future, when Christ returns, and all nations now will be serving God, that they will still be going up to Jerusalem to keep the Feast of Tabernacles from year to year. And finally, number 8, what is God's promise for obedience to him and to his Sabbath? We found that in breaking of the Sabbath and the holy days, it led to their captivity. It led to their destruction. Now we find that in obedience to the Sabbath, and this is not only true nationally, it's not only true from a church perspective, it is also true personally, that as we turn our lives and get in tune with God, God's blessings will begin to flow. And so he says in Isaiah 58, verses 13 and 14, "If you then will turn away your foot from the Sabbath." Now, if the Sabbath is not all that important, or if it's whatever, what difference does it make? Why would we find here in a prophecy that is yet to come, why does he say, "If we will turn away our foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, and honorable, and you shall honor him, and not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words." When we turn our lives and get back in tune with God, as Paul said, "I practice what is written in the law and in the prophets." When we do that, then Paul or Isaiah says, "Then shall you delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth. And I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it." Great rewards come from getting in tune with God's law and getting in tune with the laws specifically in the Sabbath. It does make a difference, by the way. It really does make a difference. God says so. And if any of you would like more information about it, we do have the two booklets that are available. All you have to do is go on the website and you can order them. On Sunset to Sunset, God's Sabbath Rest, and on the God's Holy Day Plan, that they will picture, and they will go through much more than what I've been able to, but it is part of the gospel of the kingdom of God. Let's get our lives in tune with what God says.